From Mothman and Nessie to the spirit that haunts your home, welcome to Bob After Dark, a podcast about legends, lore, and the supernatural. So turn your lights down and your volume up and enjoy your trip to the shadows.
Children of the night, and welcome to Bob After Dark, the show that takes you into the shadows and goes and says hello everything that goes bump in the night. I'm your host with the most that enjoys toast, Bob, and alongside of me, as always, is my ever wonderful, ever vampiric, ever cape wearing, tracksuit wearing,
tracksuit
looking wearing, vampiric, heartthrob friend. Brother of mine, Count Panic himself. Oh, hey there, Count.
Oh, hey there, Bob. How's it going tonight?
Oh, it's going, Count Panic. How are you doing?
I'm doing just fine. Another week here, of course, Bob After Dark, ready to go, ready to rock and roll inside the track.
that just sounds like we're at, like, yeah. You know, that's like the classic radio introduction right there.
Ready to go, you know. Ready to rock, ready to roll here on Bob After Dark tonight. Yeah. So, Bob, I'm very excited to be here tonight with you once again.
Absolutely. On a Tuesday, which we were initially thinking we were going to be on a Thursday, so it's kind of nice to be here on the Tuesday that we were expecting.
We didn't know, Bob. Sometimes we have a lot of balls in the air and we're just going by the seat of our pants. But Tuesday night, traditional night for Bob After Dark. It's good to be back here again, once again, in our time slot. But Bob, I think you have something to ask me.
I do, because the fans will be very disappointed if I do not.
Yeah.
Count Panic. What is your weekend update?
You know what? The weekend was pretty good this week, Bob. And, you know, Steve was here last week. Michaels, professional wrestler extraordinaire. And he would be proud of the weekend I had because I took in some live pro wrestling over the weekend, Bob.
That's an old pastime of yours, truly, as you may know.
Of course, Bob. I remember the days when you used to dabble a little bit inside and outside the ring. But I took in a show, ARW Pro, which is a local organization here in Northwest Indiana, Chicagoland area, the region, as we like to call it. But ARW Pro, they returned for the first time in over a year to live wrestling. And it was a good time, Bob. It's been a while since I've been out to see some live
sports.
Did
you get into the ring, Count?
I didn't get into the ring like last time.
Yeah, because people would have, you would have trounced everybody with your vampire strike.
Sure, yes. Vampires conquer all. But I didn't hop into the ring like I did that one time, which, you know, I regret now because getting into the ring when you're not got the expertise, that's a dangerous thing right there. But I was happy to watch those all those folks there do a great job putting on some wrestling. And it was just nice to be out, Bob. Nice to see something happen.
I'm happy that you had a good weekend.
Yeah. Normally, I don't have much to report on, but this is a pretty good weekend.
I'm happy to hear.
And I want to give a shout-out right now.
Give a shout-out. That's fine.
To Andy. Andy is listening right now. Andy, of course, has been in the hospital, so it's good to have Andy
back.
You know,
we were wondering.
Long-time listener.
Yes, we're happy to have Andy back. Welcome back, Andy. Good to see you in health, at least. That's positive.
Yes, it's good to see him back listening to the show. So, Andy, welcome back, and glad you're back with us here on Bob After Dark. But, yes, the weekend was fine. Pro wrestling, Bob, and there's nothing that gets me going. It makes me feel like a child again and watching some pro wrestling. You know, don't try that at home, Bob. That's
don't
what they
try
tell
that.
You.
Yeah, don't
try this at home.
Don't try this at home.
Yeah, Steve will tell you that for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Would you like to know what I did all weekend?
Did you wrestle, Bob?
Oh, I wrestled something all right.
What'd you do?
I got my second vaccination.
Oh,
pump.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Oh, that I have been down all weekend, like nasty level amounts of sickness.
Really?
I am just now starting to bounce back 100% and like feel myself again. But, oh my God.
I hear stuff about
that. Oh boy. Friday, I like had no motor skills. It was hard to walk, hard to talk, like fever, shakes, chills, sweats. Saturday, same thing. Sunday, splitting headache and had no energy. Yesterday is starting to bounce back, and then today I'm pretty much 100%. Minus just being tired, but that's just the ye old Bob way of things.
Well, I'm glad you're okay, Bob, and I'm sure if we tried to do a show over the weekend, we couldn't do it. But You are back and ready for action. It's good to see you up and walking around, and or at least sitting down. But you look fine, Bob. You look healthy.
Oh, well, thank you, Count. I feel just sleepy, but healthy is a good word.
And might I say that flannel pops on camera right there.
Well, the flannel. You know, it's like the one time I decided to wear a flannel because I was like, you know what? Maybe I'm going to coordinate my outfit with Count this evening and wear flannels together. And it's not like we don't text each other several times a week anyway.
No.
You know, well, check in. It's not like we could just be like, hey, can we coordinate our outfits?
Yeah.
I figured what spookier way to deal with a chilly May, mid-May.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I like the flannel. I wear flannel from time to time, but wearing flannel in May just seems kind of outrageous to me.
That's what I said. May I should be rocking like a loose long sleeve shirt.
Yeah. No.
But no. Here in Chicagoland, we're dealing with it.
Yeah, we'll get through it, Bob. We'll get through it.
Absolutely.
We'll survive.
You know, Count.
Yeah.
I have to tell the fans what they're listening to.
What is this, Bob?
All right. So let's say this is your first time ever watching us on the live show. Or if this is your first time ever listening to us in podcast land, you are listening to Bob After Dark. Or your weekly podcast about legends, lore, and supernatural, things that go bump in the night, lights in the sky, cryptid stories, things that go bump in the day.
Mm, yeah,
I'm working on a new tagline. Okay. Bear with me.
Ready to rock and roll.
Bob After Dark, you're ready to rock and roll.
That's not bad either. It doesn't rhyme, but it's pretty good.
No, so we're it's a paranormal show where we split the show up into a few different parts. One is where we discuss this weird spooky news of the week, and then we dive right into the lore of the week.
Yes,
which is where we talk about the meat and potatoes of the episode, something centralized paranormal. We have some lore for you, and then if we have time for it or we have it, viewer submission mail, that's where you, the fans, submit to us weird encounters that you may have had.
Yes, weird encounters indeed, whether you're wearing flannel or not.
Yes. Now, podcast folks that are tuning into the live show wondering where the podcast was last week, experimenting with the splitting in half, because we were going to be splitting the show in half, top of the week, bottom of the week, right?
Yeah.
I'm not done working out the kinks yet. So I'm going to be uploading that episode within the next couple of days from last week, and then I'll have this one up normal. I need to experiment with the transitioning a little bit more between the two, because it just sounded really awkward to be starting off the second part of the show unless I record something like another VO. I don't know. I'm figuring that out. So pardon the delay, folks. Just kind of dealing with a little bit of tech things, I guess, trying to figure out something new, and in the process it put me a little behind, so I do apologize.
It happens, Bob.
But we'll be back to normal this week, and then hopefully by June we'll have that kind of figured out. I know it sounds like a long time away, but we're almost halfway through 2021.
No, for sure. It doesn't feel like feels like it's almost winter time once again, doesn't it? It feels like fall.
It feels like fall. You're it feels like we skipped like the 3 days of spring we had, and it's like, you can skip that entire hot month of the year, and
we'll be talking about Krampus soon enough.
Well, you know, hopefully we can make it to Krampus Knock this year.
I'm hoping they have.
Because I drank Bells and Chains on the couch last year.
Not the same, though.
I got drunk nonetheless.
But you were drunk on the couch. You want to get drunk with thousands of other people wearing
Krampus
costumes.
Yeah, Krampus outfits and just talking about the show. We got our booth. I'm smiling and jolly.
Yeah.
Those are good times.
Yeah. Happy Bob is a good Bob.
All right, let's dive right into the show, Count Panic.
Yeah.
You ready to dive right into
the show? Let's dive into it.
So the first part of the show is where we're going to be talking about weird news.
Weird news.
This is the weird, spooky news of the week. These are articles that you, the audience, finds for us to talk about on the show, or things that I find interesting, and I don't feel Count Panic in on any of the ones I pick.
No clue.
Panic gets to hear the article and gives us the hashtag Panic's Take. Sometimes, if the story's a little controversial, I'll get on what we call the Bob Soapbox, where we talk about it.
Controversial.
But these are the news articles that are weird, spooky, and paranormal-based. Things like when a ghost sighting ends up in major news articles, or perhaps weird advances in science that borderline on science fiction. Or in this case, a long-thought myth come to life.
What is this?
All right, so our first news article comes from LiveScience.com. It's a science-based website. I don't know why I describe that, because I guess you would put the two together.
I would think so.
Life Science, they share a lot of, I get a lot of our science-based news from them, and they're a good source for that. But scientists have caught footage of the Kraken.
Really? They released
centuries of searching, yes. They tricked the giant squid's basketball-sized eyes, and they that might have been the key. All right, folks, bear with me. I don't speak Latin, despite you might think I do. I do not. So the Architeuthis dux, A-R-C-H-I-T-E-U-T-H-I-S-D-U-X, the world's largest known squid, is surprisingly camera-shy. The elusive giant squid has wriggled its way into folklore for thousands of years, inspiring tales of the fearsome krakens with bodies of as large as islands. In reality, the adux, which I prefer to pronounce it because it's much easier, is a tad smaller than that, capable of growing to about 46 feet or 14 meters long, about the length of a semi-trailer. But despite their size, these cephalopods are almost never seen in the water. Most observations of the behemoths come from the dead or dying squids that wash up on shores, or become ensnarled in deep-sea nets or in the stomachs of whales. That finally changed in 2012 when a team of marine scientists filmed a dux in its natural habitat, 2,000 feet. But back then, they were only able to kind of capture very little bit of a silhouette. They tried it again in 2019 in the Gulf of Mexico and were able to pull it off. And now, finally, they got a much, much better shot of this thing. And the idea was that they used lights to kind of trick the squid of looking up, and then they took the picture, because if the squid looked at the camera dead on, it would, you know, bloop away.
And there's footage of this.
There is now footage, like good quality, no more blurry images, guys. This is like, you know, grade A cryptid depiction stuff. I wouldn't really call the Kraken encrypted, but I'm going to. Listen, if I could get a victory for the pseudoscience that is my cryptozoology, I'm going with
it. Why not?
We finally get it. So, hashtag panic stake.
Well, you know, I'm just glad it's not a blurry photo. So many times these cryptids, always, especially Bigfoot, always captured on camera, but it's always just so darn blurry, it's hard to make it out. I can't wait to see this photo. This might be the first time, and again, we're calling it a cryptid, the Kraken. They released it. It is a cryptid, and I just want to see it, because I'm excited to see an actually non-blurry photo for once in my life. All these cryptids have blurry photos. There's never one clear photo.
You know, Panic, we're going to do something a little different.
What's that?
During the show, I'm actually going to send you a link to the article so you can share it on the Children of the Night Facebook page while I
work. Do we have a picture of that?
I could share you the article, and that will proceed to show you.
I could probably pull it up on the video right now, then. Let's see if I can do that.
Well, I mean, give me a second. Sure. I'll send this right over, because I just closed out of it.
We can do this in live time, Bob.
That's the beauty of doing a live show. The podcast fans, they're going to get this part edited out, and they're like, oh, wow, they were really quick on this.
Yeah, but
hold on. I'm sending it right over.
Sure, you can send it to me.
I'm sending it right over, and you can get a chance to check this out for yourself. It's pretty spectacular. You know, I have a weird fear of these types of creatures, like the octopi and stuff, because these things are way too smart for their own good. And they're absolutely horrifying with the way they like handle themselves. But the giant squid is such an interesting story, and the fact that this is what the Kraken was based on, you know, is going up and destroying boats with one flip of its tentacle.
Now, why was the Kraken so angry, Bob?
Well, I mean, you would be too if you had a bunch of people with boats and stuff.
Yeah, that makes sense right there, too. But yeah. I always just wondered about the crack in the back. We never did an episode.
We did! way back in the early days, we did an episode with Steve, actually, about Davy Jones' locker.
Oh, yes, that's right.
That was
during
Pirate Lore month. That was that was a long time ago. Maybe we'll revisit that.
No, that is true, and I do remember that episode. You know, it escapes me from time to time, Bob, as far as the whole episodes go. Sometimes I remember. Sometimes, you know, I try not to forget, Bob. It's sometimes tough, but Let's see if I get this photo put up for you guys right here. Let's see.
So for our live fans at home, Count is going to put up a quick picture for you guys to can see. Or if not, Count Panic's actually going to be putting this up exclusively on the Bob After Dark fan page for you guys to see. It is on Facebook.com. I think it's just called / Children of the Night.
Let's
if
see
not,
what this is, Bob. You can is see this the, it right here?
That is it right there. Okay. So they had to pretty much direct the eyes of the Kraken away from the camera in order to get the shot. And you could just see the massive size of this thing. I know the picture's not very big, but can you imagine just the void of water and these giant tentacle creature type things coming to attack you? Absolutely horrifying, but fascinating at the same time. And it's really cool that we finally got like a really good image of the Kraken, like to be, you know, to be a thing.
I'm gonna frame that picture. I'm gonna print it on a frame. And I think, Bob, historic purposes, of course, but look at that once again. It's hard to believe that's a Kraken right there. Now, we sure this is not an octopus of any nature.
No, it is okay. A giant squid.
Okay.
It is the giantest of squids.
All right, just making sure.
These are the thing. This is what Davy Jones had as a pet. This is the natural thing. This is the cryptid, the thing. I'm calling it a win for cryptozoology. Scientist be darned.
All right, there you go, Bob.
So, # panic stake.
Right? Well, like I said, it's unbelievable that we get a picture of it that's not blurry. I'm for one satisfied. And, you know, I'm trying to make sure it's not an octopus there. But I'm going to take your word for it, Bob. It is indeed a Kraken.
So we're gonna call that one a very happy thing.
Yeah, sure.
Because I don't have a happy story next.
Oh, this is a sad story?
This one, it's not sad. Well, I mean, it is sad, but it's horrifying.
Right.
Like, absolutely horrifying.
Right.
I'm not going to dive too much into it, but I saw this article that WGN shared earlier, and I kind of slipped it in because it segues into the next story because I didn't want to, like, leave this one, but it makes for a decent segue.
Sure.
All right, so imagine that you're, like, out on, like, a river bay, right? You're out for a hike. And a large tide comes in, and eventually the tide rolls up, and 71 dead bodies just float up to the top and then wash ashore. That's what happened in New Delhi. Apparently a person was taking a hike around, and there was a large rainstorm that day.
Okay.
And apparently 71 bodies just floated up to the top and then floated straight to shore. No cause of death has been determined yet by the government. No idea why these bodies were all in one river at one exact time, because they haven't really, you know, I don't want to be too weird, but states decay, etc. So we don't know how long they've been in there. But you got to think, 71 corpses in one body of water, and people are, you know, probably drinking out of that and catching fish and stuff. But or they just floated down there. But either way, where did 71 bodies come from, and why all at once? # panic stake.
So there's no story of a boat sinking or anything like that in this body of water, or nothing of that nature. No history of 71 people that went missing.
No.
So just this is one big mystery then.
The only idea that the officials can say is right now in the world we're experiencing a lumber shortage.
We are, yeah.
We are, yeah. And they're saying because there is a lumber shortage, there's a a coffin shortage. So maybe families are just kind of doing burials at sea, right? Because there's no wood to make caskets. So they're saying people are just throwing people into the water.
Interesting.
And it just so happened that they sunk, you know, whatever's going to happen after that. But one good rainstorm kind of lifted up all of these bodies up.
Terrifying.
And, it's a horrifying story. I it's definitely a mystery. I don't know if the lumber shortage is the answer. That's the only thing they could think of. Because even at a lumber shortage, there's other ways you could do this.
Yeah, no.
And they're
for
like,
sure.
You know, it's kind of a weird thing to be doing. So
I think it's illegal too, right?
That's a lot. Yeah.
Yeah.
I would say so. That's a lot.
Yeah, no, for sure. Well, I mean, that's one way of putting it, because, again, if there's no story of people gone missing, then I don't really know how to explain this. Unless it's going under the radar. And to your point, you might be right. Maybe just the cost in general. The cost of a funeral is expensive as well, not just the lumber to buy a casket. So you never know.
But we're going to segue from that one into, again, same kind of story, except this correlates directly with what we were. By the way, I said that one was from WGN Chicago. Mm-hmm. That story took place in New Delhi. Mm-hmm. This one is actually written to us from coast to coast. Not to us, but I found it from coast to coast.
George is writing us now?
Not, yeah, George is like, hey, Bob, I got a scoop for you.
Here, share this
it's
on your
like,
show.
Hey, thanks, George. Actually, this one I got to give a shout out. I see Kale Stars listening on the show right now. Kale, and we have the ACG Paranormal Group is chiming in right now and chatting a bit too. So this one goes out to every paranormal investigator that listens to the show, Jack Chavez, etc. Everybody that listens to the show that's a paranormal investigator, this story goes out to you because these are legitimately the realest things that can happen to us when we're out on investigations, right? And this is a real fear that we always talk about and joke about, but this legitimately happened. I'm not going to share the news article title yet. I'm just going to read the story written by Tim Benall from Coast to Coast. Authorities in Massachusetts were called upon to investigate a possible discovery of human remains after a crew of paranormal television show stumbled upon something anomalous buried in a basement. According to the Massachusetts State Police, the odd incident occurred late last month, as the unnamed program was being filmed in a building in the east city of East Bridgewater. Apparently, the production came and prepared to find something seriously strange, as they not only enlisted a cadaver dog as part of their team, but also a possessed ground-penetrating radar. While exploring the basement of the building, the body-sniffing pooch alerted the team to something unusual and had an examination with the radar showed an anomaly underground. Understandably, the ghost hunter suspected that they just hit reality TV and decided to call the police to figure out what was going on. However, the suspicions of the ghost hunters turned out to be false as the cops dug up several feet below the ground and eventually a large volume of groundwater was observed floating through the excavated area. With that in mind, police determined that this was likely the cause of the anomaly detected by the radar, although that doesn't exactly explain what caught the attention of the cadaver dog. But as it may, the state of police declared the case closed and mused that it merely was a ghost story that almost was.
So, wait a second. You lost me here.
Okay.
So, go ahead.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it was just I was trying to split things up a little bit because the writer kind of fluffed the story a bit. All right. So a group of paranormal investigators are shooting a TV show in this area of Massachusetts. Mm-hmm. Part of their story was that they were trying to prove that there was maybe a body buried there and that's why perhaps there was a ghost. We don't know. That part's just speculation. But they brought some ground penetrating radar, right, that you could see under the ground with. And they brought a cadaver dog to see if they could find out if there's a body buried there of something that maybe they were investigating.
Okay.
Well, lo and behold, the cadaver dog started going crazy in the basement of this place. So then they used the radar. They discovered an anomaly. They called the police because, we think we found a body. And it's like, we actually were correct on our suspicions. When the police showed up to kind of dig up what they believed they discovered, they dug up some sort of like fresh water source that kind of came up and then it dropped right back down. So that it explained what the radar caught was this, whatever this fresh water source that they dug up was, and it went, you know, it drained right back. But the cadaver dog scented a cadaver, mm-hmm, and they couldn't find that. But the police decided to call case closed.
But the dog knows something that
the dog knew something that they don't know, but the police still called the case closed. They said, we dug it up. What more do you want? You know, there's water down there.
Huh.
So hashtag panic stick.
Well, I'm just saying, that seems like you're giving up a little too easily here. I mean, the dog obviously knows something's happening. And we should trust the dog. Some of these dogs, with the power of their noses, it's something else. It's something to behold. So whenever a dog is going in deeper and deeper for investigation, then it's not the time to stop the investigation. We know you hit an end of the road here, maybe the end of an alleyway here, but still continue on. The dog is obviously onto something, Bob. I think they gave up way too easy. There's more to this story.
Now, I'm no expert when it comes to you know, dog sniffs. But I do know the dog, these dogs, these cadaver dogs, especially if they're well-trained, they're really good at what they do. In fact, sometimes they're scarily too good at what they do, and you hear these stories of these dogs predicting deaths before they happen because they're smelling out, like, the next victim, right? I don't know. It's an interesting case, and I feel like that's a fear that every paranormal investigator has. You go and do these things sometimes, like, let's be honest, sometimes really sketchy places to go do an investigation at. You go do these investigations, and you don't know what you're going to find. When you do, you know, stuff like this, and you're in a, let's just say, a sketchier part of the town, you also got to worry about, you know, your surroundings, the defense you're kind of around, etc., right? So let's just say that, you know, you get there and you always wonder what you're going to find, right? And I always think the same thing. Sometimes when I go investigating, I think I'm going to come across, let's say, some sketchy characters sleeping in an abandoned area, yeah, or whatever it might be. And I don't, and not even, maybe not just sketchy, but people that just needed a place to sleep. You know, those are things I expect to see. But I think every paranormal investigator always has, like, that, I don't want to say fear, but it's something that we always kind of, like, morbidly joke about. And I don't want to say joke in a lighting manner.
No.
But it's just like, you know, we're in this kind of place. What if we find a dead body? You know, yes. Like, and these this ghost sighting is kind of them trying to be like, hey, can you find my body, please? Okay, thanks.
Well, so is that a fear of yours that you will run into that one day?
I would say yes. I know I've joked with it, like when I'm with Pete or something, you know, yeah. I'm like, what if you find some remains, right? Or something like that. Like, what if we, you know, it's like, what if we get an answer we don't want to know, yeah, right? Yeah, yeah. That's always something we always joke about. Because yeah, that's, you know, the reality of the situation is we're not doing, our hobby's not the safest hobby in the world. It really isn't. I mean, it is. It's, I don't want to say it's dangerous. It's not like we're bungee jumping into the Grand Canyon strapped with dynamite, you know.
Oh, that's dangerous.
That's
as
dangerous.
Well. I wouldn't do that.
But
either.
I mean, like, at the end of the day, you know, some of these places we're at is a bit, it's not the nicest. Sometimes we're in some weird situations. And it's a joke we kind of do to kind of play it off, to kind of ease the tension. It's like, ha-ha-ha, what if we Hardy Boys a body up, mm-hmm, or Nancy drew a body up, right? And, well, in this case, they thought they did. And I don't know, it's kind of strange that this corpse-sniffing dog was able to kind of smell out a cadaver and no cadaver. And, the you know, maybe there's a ghost story to be said there yet.
Would you ever, Bob, and think about this when you go on investigations? Think about taking a dog with you? On the investigations, like taking a dog with?
I've heard of groups that do it. I don't have a cadaver dog just at my disposal.
Well, I know, but just any dog with a good nose, I feel like, would do the
trick.
You have a
hellhound yourself.
Yes, yes. He might. Maybe John will call in and talk about the dog's nose. But yes, this dog has it's a beagle, so they're hunting dogs, and they have very good noses. So if you're looking for a dog for the team, you got to talk to him. I think he'll be happy to let you borrow Benny there, but I just think about, you know, you going on investigations with these groups of folks there, and they're going out, and I think the Bob After Dark ghost hunting team may need a dog on their side. I mean, wouldn't it take you into the right direction of where you want to go anyway? Because sometimes you're in those buildings, it seems like forever, trying to find the source of all this haunted material. I feel like if you had a dog, the dog could take you right to that source.
It's not a terrible thought, and like I said, I do know groups that do that. There's I can't think of his name, so I'm not going to quote his name. I apologize, because he's a listener. I know he is. He's a former police officer who has his dog go with him on investigations. He does a lot of solo stuff out in, like, the Midwest area. He does a lot of solo trips, and he does a lot of solo trips for investigations, group outings,
sure,
right?
Yeah.
But he always brings his dog with him, not only for defense, but, like, his dog sniff stuff out like that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's not uncommon. I know psychics that, maybe not investigations, but I do know psychics that work with cats, too.
Cats.
Same concept. Or, you know, you bring your cat with you, it might be your, you know, spiritual connection medium cat, and that cat might go and smell things out. You're familiar, if you will. So some people bring, if you're of the metaphysical mindset and not like the, oh, my dog can sense things out, some people will bring, like, their familiars with them if you're of a metaphysical mindset to kind of help bring about whatever you're looking for, sniff out whatever you're looking for. So, yes, I do know investigators that work with animals.
Well, Bob, you have a few cats now.
Yes.
Would you bring the cats out for investigation?
Mine. Absolutely not. No, those cats are very much house cats.
No, but still, take them outside. Maybe go to the old Crown Point jail cell, do an investigation there with the cats. Might be.
They're not mine.
Okay.
No, I could. Each one's personality would be. No, absolutely not. They're good cats, but they're not. I'm not taking them on an investigation. But Benny, on the other hand.
Yes. John, call up and tell us if you want rent Benny out to Bob After Dark Ghost
Hunter.
I
think we should rent Benny out. I've hung out with Benny. He's a good dog.
Good dog.
I think we should get Benny. Tell John to bring Benny out for an investigation. We'll see what Benny's good at.
He's gonna hunt something down, Bob. It's gonna be like Scooby Doo out there. You're gonna
Ruh-roh, Benny. Ruh-roh, Rob.
Be like, hey, what would you do, Benny, for a Scooby snack right here? So
I think we got a caller.
It might be him. Let's find out.
Okay, well, you want to take it live?
Taking it live.
We're taking it live. Now, before I take your call, listener, our phone lines are open, 219-845-1100. Feel free to call in, just like Taking Prediction John. This is who it is on the phone.
Indeed it is, Bob.
Ah, hello, John.
Hey, you don't have to rent Benny. He's always available to help.
See?
You just let us know, and we'll meet you wherever you want to meet. And all he asks for is a couple treats.
Scooby snacks.
And he'll put his nose to work for you, Bob.
I happen to really enjoy dogs. I would pet the pup and get him fed and all that good stuff. Have you ever had a paranormal experience with Benny before, John? Like the classic look of a dog seeing something that you're not, growling in the distance, barking at something, staring off at nothing, or transfixed on a point in the house?
Yeah, I don't know if it would be a paranormal situation, but he does have a pretty keen nose and a sense for other animals. For example, he was on a porch not too long ago, and we have a dog that that lives on the block, on the end of the block where the owner walks once in a while. And he's not too fond of the dog, but without the dog being in sight, he knows the dog's coming. Or I'll take him to Wicker Park and he'll put his nose down and he'll sense the dogs in the park. Even if it's not in sight, it might be all the way around the park. And he gallops at a pretty good pace with me, so eventually we'll catch up to a dog that's, maybe 2 miles away in the park. So he's pretty good at that. I mean, a lot of times he will look around, stand still in the back or whatever, and so he's got that. He does have that sense that something's around, but I don't know. I mean,
That's fair. Maybe we'll have to take him out on an outdoor one to see how he does. Maybe we'll do Reader Road.
We'll get led to some barbecue or something like that, maybe.
I'm a vegetarian. I was going to say that's not a terrible thing to be led to, but I'm a vegetarian. Yeah. Now, if it led me to maybe a cold beer or some pierogies or something, if Benny could do that, listen,
Benny's good for that, but sure, I would be kind of curious to see what he could do too. But
John, we'll bring you out and we'll do Reader Road. I'll reach out to Pete. We'll make a night of it because we got cool summer nights coming up soon. I think Reader Road, and it's just in Griffith. We should do that. I want to put Benny's nose to the test.
It might lead us somewhere we don't want to go, though, Bob.
It's fucking listen. No, it's always someplace you want to go, and we'll have Pete with us. We'll be fine.
All right,
John. Thank you for calling in.
You know what? That sounds good. And hey, I'm glad you really recovered from that second shot.
I'll tell you, that thing beat
like
my.
Sounds like you got it pretty bad, huh?
Every bad side effect you could possibly get, John, I got. But thank you for calling in and the nice wishes.
Sure. You take care and keep in touch.
Absolutely, John.
There you have it. Your very own. Now, who's gonna? We need a mystery machine now, don't you think?
Our very own Bob After Dark mystery machine. Now, hear me out. Listen, if I got to pick the mystery machine, it would be some sort of hearse, right? It would be a hearse and just kind of let them out, and it would be black. It would be like black on black, right? They're like a nice matte black with like a like a chromed black finish on the sides.
Yeah.
But because I have other people in my life that help manage the style and aesthetic of the show, it would be purple on black with some purple glow lights and some smoke machine.
It'd be nice, but let me ask you a question. Have you ever been on an investigation?
Yeah.
Like, Bob, come investigate this place. We think it's haunted. Then you find out the person haunting it is actually just a person. You ever pull the mask off the person to reveal it's just like the gardener or a professor, you know, like it's Scooby-Doo.
No.
That'd be something, though, wouldn't it?
No, listen, I count.
Not to take it off track, but that'd be
No.
Cool.
Okay, we're good to go off track for a quick second.
Wouldn't that
What's
be kind
your
of experience?
Cal Panic.
Yes.
With all due respect, you've been on investigations with
me. I have.
When have we ever come across something where we're like, ruh-roh,
no.
Panic, we gotta solve this case.
Well, we split up sometimes, don't we?
Split up, gang.
Yeah.
And then
up.
I start wearing what is the Fred's scarf called? Is that an ascot?
Yeah, that's it.
An
yeah.
ascot, right? Yeah, that's yeah. I'm gonna start wearing an ascot on investigations. Be like, come on, gang, let's go.
What is the point of splitting up? I mean,
cover more ground.
Yeah, it seems doesn't seem
cause
safe.
More damage that way, depending on which way you look at it.
Doesn't seem safe.
Listen, I can imagine like me, you, and Steve like being like, oh, let's split up, and be like, oh, Bob, you could go on your own. You'll figure it out.
How come Fred always went with Daphne?
I behave. But no, listen, what you're describing isn't necessarily a paranormal investigation, but I would say a murder mystery.
Nobody got murdered on Scooby-Doo, though, did they?
Like a legit one?
There
no.
was never like a case, hey, we got to solve this murder. It was just people, you know, goofing around and trying to be up to no good, and that's when you had to take down the criminal, but... I just never knew. You know, you've been on investigations without me, and I wondered if you ever uncovered something like that where you found a ghost or an entity and you pulled the mask off and it ended up being a human being. I didn't know. Clear it up.
No, I mean, I guess there's like a level to that. If you're like going into an investigation to debunk it, if you're one of those types, because there are, there are groups that do that. If you watch like Ghost Nation, they're more about the debunking than they are, you know, not debunking, but they want to find the truth.
Yeah.
So I guess if you wanted to say something like that, sure. Be like, oh, the Scooby-Doo approach to paranormal investigations. Come on, gang. Let's solve this case.
Maybe next time we'll split up. Get Pete Grice in there. Split up the whole Northwest Indiana paranormal. Go into different rooms and see what happens. Just a thought, Bob.
Just a thought.
Yeah. Back on track now.
Back on track. You know, Count, I got to say, it's nice to be back here on Tuesday night, but you totally derailed my train of thought.
No.
Because now I'm living in like a headspace where it's like, what color ascot would I wear? Would I wear like a flannel and like an ascot when I go out?
Purple, probably, right?
Purple ascot? I favor blue more often.
Like Bob after our colors.
It's purple and black. The color scheme, again, was helped along the way.
Yeah.
But blue's my favorite color, so maybe blue or black. I don't know. The guys, if you're watching in the live show, put it up on the chat there. And if you're a podcast fan, maybe you guys should chime in on the social media.
Let us know.
Now, folks, we're going to take a quick break here shortly. But before we take our break, I have a couple things to urge you guys. One, you should be following us on social media, facebook.com/BobAfterDark. Or our Instagram page at Bob After Dark, Twitter under construction, and TikTok coming very soon. You guys can follow us on all of the social medias. Because, Count Panic, did you know that we are a mere 98 followers away from 2,000 followers on Facebook?
98 away?
98 away. And it's been a little over a year since our last thousand follower. And that's like a big deal, especially in these days with the world of Facebook algorithms being completely screwy and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. The finding those follows for free are not easy. So the fact that we made it to this point, I was really surprised because, you know, I'm going to start paying for Facebook advertising at some point, but we were riding that wave real nice.
Yeah, word of mouth.
Yes. So folks, if you get a chance, follow along. Facebook.com/BobAfterDark. Invite all of your friends to watch the show. And you can also follow us on Instagram at Bob After Dark. That's being updated a little bit more regularly than it's been in the past. I need to get better at it. I understand it's a little tough to run the business side of things with social media and pump out the episodes and research and keep Count Panic going.
Yeah.
Either way, folks, follow us on social media. Invite your friends to follow like us on Facebook. That'd be really great.
Make a Facebook just to follow. If you don't have a Facebook, make one.
Make one.
Just to follow.
You can also, then, our Children of the Night fan page.
It's there, too.
That's there, too. That's more fun.
But they don't have to, like, that's not a like.
No, you join the group. But you got to like the, you have to like Bob After Dark first.
Okay.
So you like Bob After Dark, then you can go to the Children of the Night page. A lot of times on Children of the Night, people are very, they like to post a lot of dolls in my group.
Yeah. What's up with that?
I don't understand it. All right, Count, you want to take a quick break?
Sure.
All right, for our live fans at home, stick around because we're going to be right back. And to our podcast fans, keep your ears peeled because you're about to hear from a podcast that you should be listening to. Stay tuned.
Hey, true believers and new believers, this is Dr. David Hickney. I am a PhD in cryptozoology from MIT, and I'm the host of Freak of the Week. What's Freak of the Week? It's a podcast where people can call in to talk about all the crazy creatures and phenomena that are out there. Join me, my co-host, Dr. Elizabeth Marin, who may or may not be my sister. Spoiler, she is my sister, as we discuss such amazing topics like the ghost of Dave Coulier, the lost city of Miami, aliens, feline warriors, and much, much more. Freak of the Week comes out every week, hence the name, on Fridays. See you then.
And we're back. Hello, Count Panic.
Hey, Bob.
How was your break?
It was a good break, Bob. One of the best I had.
That's good. What did you do during break?
Going around solving mysteries, Bob. Trying to keep the world safe out there. A lot of people wearing masks out there. I don't know if you knew it.
That's good.
Yeah. How about you?
I started hanging out with a dog.
Oh.
Yeah.
Did you solve anything yet?
We're just hanging out. I mean, it's not like we're just kind of hanging out, and he talks, though. It's kind of
that's
like
amazing.
A big brown Great Dane.
That's something.
He speaks. He's just like, hey, ruh-roh, Rob.
That'd be terrifying.
No, it's actually kind of cool. He's a cool dog. I think I'm going to name him Scooby.
I don't think you want your dog to talk.
I've heard of weirder things, yeah, of floating cats and, other evil things.
Do you think the Mystery Gang?
Mystery Inc.
Mystery
Inc. was the name. I always wanted to do a side project with Bob After Dark. Like, I have time in the week to make more content. Of like reviewing like paranormal based media like fiction, right? Maybe I'll pick out start doing like a YouTube channel. It's like my top five favorite Scooby Doo episodes.
How come those folks though they were never terrified that Scooby was talking?
It's a cartoon. You got a suspension of disbelief.
I don't. I like to look at the facts here, Bob.
He didn't like speak fluently. He spoke. He still had like a dog kind of. Bark to
well,
him.
He's not gonna have proper English, I guess, Bob. It's tough for sometimes us to do that as
no,
well.
Trust me, I get that. Any fan of mine knows of Easter
too.
Island Massacre. They know. Yeah.
What did I say that one time?
The dissolving mountain.
Something like
was
that
it?
Too. There was something else as well I messed up on, but yes, Bob. Dog, of course, good boy. Good boy. He is.
Yes. Now he would. I got a talking dog that hangs out with me.
Yeah. Well, congrats, Bob.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
Yes. Now, Count, I have a special reason what our lore of the week is this week.
Really?
Yes. So, because I was sick this week and I didn't really get a whole lot of chance to talk and spend time with my mother, and it was Mother's Day this past Sunday. Yes. And you can't spell Mother's Day without moth.
Oh, how dare we? We forgot the...
I didn't. The social media guy.
The social
care
media,
of.
But top found, of the show, we should have done that.
I'm getting to the point.
Okay, go ahead, Bob.
Okay, so if you guys don't know, my mom's great. She's pretty much helps kind of guide me in where I need to be, even at my ripe old age. Her and my dad still, they're still alive. I got a lot of blessing on that. And my parents are very good to me, as my mom too. And because I didn't get to spend a lot of time with my mother this week, I wanted to do something special for her. So, in regard, I got a chance to be able to dedicate an episode to something I knew my mother would be really into. Now, you see, my mom and my dad, they're very, my mom's a little bit more of a believer than my dad is. My dad kind of is a little bit on the skeptical side, maybe skeptical believer. And my mom's a little bit more on the believing side. She, you know, maybe not always a believer, but she's very, they're both very, what's the word I'm looking for? They both are interested in what I have to say, even though the story might be completely far-fetched. They still are very interested. They're very supportive of what I do. This is my living. This is what my career path is. So they're very interested in this kind of a thing, and I wanted to give my mom something really interested to be in. Mm-hmm. My mother's got a couple of things she likes in the world hobby-wise, one of which is, like, Snoopy, but I couldn't find, like, the Ghost of Charles Schultz stories kicking around, nor do I think I could fill an entire episode on that. And my mother's second love behind the world of Snoopy is the world of music.
Hmm.
So in honor of Mother's Day and Marie Anderson and even Bob Anderson Sr., who's also played Mother to me more times than I care to admit, who's also a big fan of music, this week I wanted to do something special. So I wanted to dedicate an episode to some paranormal musical topics. And I didn't want to do just like ghost sightings of fill in the blank, because every celebrity that has passed, a lot of them have a ghost story assigned to them. Sometimes we have different types of things like that, right?
Yeah.
But this week I found a few different stories that all relate to the world of the paranormal in some regard, but aren't necessarily a ghost story or just weird happenings in the world of music. To my mother, Marie Anderson, and to my part-time mom, he'll laugh about it. Trust me, he gets it. To my part-time mom, Dad, Bob Anderson Sr., I just want to wish you guys very happy, thankful for putting me on this earth, and I hope you guys enjoy this episode, because this one's totally dedicated to the both of you. All right, count.
Yes.
So, there, when the world of the paranormal and music, there is one story that stands out as the big one. This is the quintessential paranormal musical story. And we touched briefly on this a very long time ago, so we're just going to pretend like we're talking about it from complete scratch and brand new, okay?
Okay.
And that is the story of Robert Johnson.
Robert Johnson.
Robert Johnson. Robert Johnson was born in 1911 and died in 1938. Robert Johnson was grew up dirt poor, very unlucky, lived in a terrible, you know, not a very good environment, but somehow pulled out and become the, what they dubbed him as, the king of the Delta blues singers. This guy was so talented with his musical taste that bands like the Rolling Stones and Bob Dylan and even Pat Boone all have said that they have dedicated their music and their passions to, and what inspired them all goes back to Robert Johnson's music. Robert Johnson's music wasn't around very long. He unfortunately passed away at the age of 26. But, or I'm sorry, 36. But anyway, that's Robert Johnson's story.
Okay.
So you might think, okay, this guy died young. He part of that our infamous club of celebrities who
young
died,
musicians,
the
yeah.
young musicians and actors, actresses that have passed away at that ripe age. And Robert's story is just a little different, though.
How so?
You see, some people say that one night, Robert Johnson wanted to play the blues so bad, but wasn't very good. He was so bad, in fact, that everyone heard him told him so. He disappeared for a while, and when he returned, he was different. His musical abilities were astonishing, almost supernatural. And musicians who'd mocked him previously now wanted to know his secret. According to the now-famous legend, Johnson had one simple answer. He went out to the crossroads right before midnight when the devil offered to tune his guitar in exchange for his soul. And, well, Robert Johnson took that deal. Apparently, he went out to the corner of on the crossroad of U.S. 61 and U.S. 49 in Clarksdale. But some people have went out there since and tried to strike up the same kind of deal, and they've never been able to do it. Funny enough, this is just a brief interlude before I tell you guys the story of the meeting of Robert Johnson and the devil himself. Dan Aykroyd himself, at every House of Blues he's ever opened, has a jar of dirt from U.S. 61 and U.S. 49 in the House of Blues. That's a fun fact that I heard from the lips of Dan Aykroyd when he was standing right next to me when I was talking to him about, you know, paranormal stuff.
Is it on display or just kind of...
It's hidden.
It's hidden.
It's hidden. Because I asked him, I said, you know, we were talking about it, and this is when I pitched a show to him, and he was interested in coming on to be a guest, which, Dan, if you're listening to the show, I think we're a little overdue now, buddy, if you can give me a bone.
Busy
you know?
Guy.
Yeah, I know he's a busy guy. He told me he was interested. We need to get Dan on the show, so... Folks, if you can get Dan's attention, let him know I'm still doing this and I'm more popular than ever. So
yeah.
Kind of get on it. That'd be really cool, Mr. Aykroyd. But anyway, he did tell me that's the story about the dirt from the crossroads. But before I tell you the story, and this is just kind of another side loot, in the world of deal making with demons and entities and deities, right? The concept is that you go to a crossroads, and the crossroads, any crossroads is supposed to have some sort of symbolic power that you're able to go there with a need and you could strike up a deal with them. And the idea is that they would give you whatever your mortal want is in exchange for something that they want. And typically that's your life force, your soul, your energy, whatever it is that you want to call it, because some people don't believe in that stuff.
But. Of course.
That's the idea.
Yeah.
So you go to the crossroads and you go make a deal. Robert Johnson, the blues singer, even wrote a song about being on the crossroads too. So it's kind of funny that even after the fact.
So he's basically telling us in that song that this is what he did.
This is what he did, in essence, pretty much. But let me read you guys the story. This comes to us from the One Stage magazine. And Haunted American Tours was quoted from their website. This story was told by Henry Goodman once upon a time ago. Robert Johnson had been playing down by Yazoo City and over at the Baloo trying to get back up the Helena. Ride left him on the road next to the levee, walking up the highway, guitar in his hand, propped up on his shoulder. October cool night, full moon filling up the dark sky, Robert Johnson thinking about Sunhouse preaching to him. Put that guitar down, boy, you're driving people nuts. Robert Johnson needing, as always, a woman and some whiskey. Big trees all around, dark and lonesome road, and a crazed, poised dog howling and moaning in a ditch alongside the road, sending electrified chills up and down Robert Johnson's spine, coming up to the crossroads and just south of Rosedale. Robert Johnson, feeling bad and lonesome, knows people up in the highway in Gunnison. Can get a drink of whiskey and probably a little bit more up there. Man sitting off the side of the road on a log at the crossroads says, "You're late, Robert Johnson." Robert Johnson drops to his knees and says, "Maybe not." The man stands up, tall, barrel-chested, and black as forever closed eyes of Robert Johnson's stillborn baby, and walks to the middle of the crossroads where Robert Johnson kneels. He said, "Stand up, Robert Johnson. You want to throw the guitar over there in that ditch with that hairless dog and go back up to Robinsonville and play the harp with Willie Brown and son, because you're just into the guitar player like the rest. Or you want to play that guitar like nobody ever played it before. Make a sound nobody ever heard before. You want to be the king of the Delta Blues and have all the whiskey and woman you want?" Robert Johnson replies, "It's a lot of whiskey and women, devil man." "I know you, Robert Johnson," says the man. Robert Johnson feels the moonlight bearing down on his head and back of his neck as the moon seems to be growing bigger and bigger and brighter and brighter. He needs it like the heat of the no-day sun bearing down, and the howling and moaning of the dog in a ditch penetrates his soul, coming up through his feet and tips of his fingers, through his arms and legs, settling in that big, empty place beneath the breastbone, causing him to shake and shudder like a man with the palsy. Robert Johnson says, "That dog gone mad." The man laughs, "That hound belongs to me. He ain't mad, he got the blues. I got a soul in my hand." The dog lets out a low, long, soulful moan, a howling like never heard before, rhythmic, yelps and barks, seizing Robert Johnson like the Grand Mal, and causing the strings on his guitar to vibrate, hum, and sing a song in dark and blue and beautiful, soulful chords and notes possessing Robert Johnson, taking him over, spinning him around, losing him inside his own self, wasting him, lifting him up into the sky. Robert Johnson looks over at the ditch and sees the eyes of the dog reflecting into the bright moonlight, or more likely it seems to Robert Johnson, glowing on their own deep violet penetrating glow. And Robert Johnson knows and feels that he is staring into the eyes of a hellhound as his body shudders from head to toe. The man says, "The dog ain't for sale, Robert Johnson, but the sound can be yours. That's the sound of the Delta Blues. I've got to have that sound, Devil Man. That sound is mine. Where do I sign?" The man says, "You ain't got a pencil, Robert Johnson. Your word is good enough. All you got to do is keep walking north. But you better be prepared. There's consequences." "Prepared for what, Devil Man?" "You know where you are, Robert Johnson? You're standing in the middle of the crossroads. At midnight, that full moon is right over your head. You take one more step, you'll be in Rosedale. You take this road east, you'll get back to Highway 61 in Cleveland, or you could turn around and go back to Bulula and just to the west sit up on the levee and look at the river. But if you take one more step in that direction you're headed, you're going to be in Rosedale at the midnight under this full October moon. And you're going to have the blues like you've never known to this world. My left hand will forever be wrapped around your soul, and your music will possess all who hear it. That's what's going to happen. That's what you're going to be prepared for. Your soul will belong to me. This isn't just any crossroads. I put this X here for a reason, and I have been waiting for you." Robert Johnson rolls his head around, his eyes upward into their sockets to stare at the blinding light of the moon, which is now completely filled to the pitch-black delta night, piercing his right eye like a bolt of lightning as the midnight hour hits. He looks at the big man squarely in the eyes and says, "Step back, Devil Man. I'm going to Rosedale. I am the blues." The man moves to one side and says, "Go on, Mr. Robert Johnson. You the king of the Delta Blues now. Go on home to Rosedale, and when you get up to that town, get yourself a plate of hot tamales, because you're going to be needing something in your stomach where you're headed." That's the story of Robert.
Wow.
Meeting the devil at the crossroads and trading his soul.
How about that, Bob?
To be able to be the blues singer that he was. And the thing is, folks, if you're not familiar, Robert Johnson, real person. Real life, did record music. And like I said, and before I read the story, he did have a lot of inspiration into the musical world that we know today. Rolling Stones and Bob Dylan and et cetera, et cetera. I was saying a few people. The real-life story of Robert Johnson is very tragic. He wasn't a very good person for what we know. We do know he was a womanizer, and he was an alcoholic. And a lot of what we say that could be potentially what led to his death was something relating to him potentially over-drinking himself or getting in trouble about the womanizing, right? But the truth of the matter is a lot of people do talk about this power that Robert Johnson had on the guitar that he didn't necessarily have. So is it possible that he wandered out to that crossroads on that evening to go and make a deal with the devil himself? What's your take, Count Panic?
Well, Bob, first off, I want to say during that story, I appreciate the acting that would involve with that story. You did two different voices there.
I tried. I tried really hard on that one. Truth be told, that's one of my favorite paranormal stories of all time. I love it. I love the concept of somebody giving up everything to be able to, what are you willing to give up to get to your dreams, right? And that's something that every creative, even me and you, get to. It's like, What am I willing to do? Now, me, I understand the demonic world, so I'm not about to go start making deals with deities and demonic entities. But you know what? You get to a point, though, and you're like, man, what will I do to accomplish my dreams, right?
Well, is this kind of case, Bob, and it's a fascinating story, of course, and one may believe, especially that he wrote a song about meeting the devil up to trade these skill sets off, that it is a true story, in fact. But it's interesting to think about, because you hear about other tales like this that don't really work out as well. Is this kind of like the basis of Devil Went Down to Georgia?
It gets pretty close, actually. It's but in that one, the devil went down to go meet
fiddle player.
What was the fiddle player's name? Johnny, right?
Yeah.
So he goes down to meet Johnny, and Johnny wasn't going to put up with that day. I mean, it's not the same story.
But I mean, there was a devil musician trade-off there, wasn't there?
There was, but in that story, though, which is fascinating, is the devil gave him an opportunity to not lose. In this case, he said, Robert Johnson, you go into that, you keep crossing over that other side of the crossroads, you're going to be giving me your soul at the end of at the end of that.
Yeah.
With the story with him and Johnny in the Devil Went Down to Georgia story, which is, that's just a song. That one, he gave him an option. You can either, you're either going to play and you're going to get this fiddle made of gold, or I'm going to get your soul.
Yeah.
It gave him an option, and Johnny took the bet to play against him, and we get one of the greatest songs ever written in humanity.
A much kinder devil in that story.
A little bit more. That one was a little bit more friendly. The Robert Johnson one. No. That, and if it wasn't the devil, it was some sort of demon on the hierarchy, a crossroads demon, if you will. They don't play. That's their job. And you go out to the crossroads. In the story that I read to you, that one is the devil was waiting for him. But in the real lore of the concept of going out to the crossroads, is you go out there to petition something to come to you.
Yeah.
That is why the idea of carrying, you get dirt from a crossroads, it's supposed to be some kind of power to it. And that's why Dan Aykroyd carries it in every one of his House of Blues clubs.
Well, the question comes down to, is it worth it? And in a way, maybe so, because we wouldn't be talking about him if he didn't make that trade-off there. We may have never got the Rolling Stones if that trade-off was never made. Never got Bob Dylan or these other famous acts.
Very possible.
The course of history would be changed forever if he didn't have that meeting with the devil, Bob.
Yes.
Fascinating.
So, story of Robert Johnson and the tale of him selling his soul to the devil. And if you guys, I'll put up the song so you guys can check it out. And I know Cal Panic for radio fans will sometimes play
the
song.
Yeah, I'll play a Robert Johnson song.
It's the Crossroad Blues song.
I'll play it after our closing.
Yeah, we usually do the closing, and then Cal Panic will play something relating to it.
Sure.
So if you guys are listening on the radio, you guys get a chance to hear it. If not, I'll make sure we put it up in the Children of the Night page for you guys to see. Now, Count Panic, the next story I have is a trigger warning. If you are dealing with some sort of mental health, this is a story that might trigger you, so I'm just giving you a heads up on a trigger warning about suicidal thoughts. Remember, folks, we do care and love about you on the show, and I do care and love about each and every one of you's mental health. We talk about this a lot on the show, so this is just a quick reminder that help is out there for you if you so choose to seek it. And remember that you matter. So if any of this next part of the story, bothersome or worrisome to you, and maybe it's going to trigger something, you can skip ahead afterwards. I'm only going to be dwelling on this for a few moments. So skip ahead maybe 5 minutes into the story, and you'll be ready to move on. But just remember, folks, if you do need it, and you do need help, there is people you can reach out to. The helpline is 1-800-273-8255. That's the National Suicide Prevention Hotline Lifeline number, or 1-800-273-TALK. And you can call and talk to them, and they're there for you. We're here for you. So just before we begin, I just wanted to toss that out there because you guys do matter to me. Further ado, this next story is the allegedly cursed song Gloomy Sunday is said to drive listeners to suicide. The story comes to us from The Graveyard Shift, written by Jessica M. Thomas. Now, folks, I do not speak this foreign language where this composer comes from, so bear with me as we try. Rezo Sresis, R-E-Z-S-O-S-E-R-E-S-S. wrote a song piece called Gloomy Sunday, and this could be one of the most controversial songs of all time. Initially written in 1933, it was soon known worldwide as the curse song, and it makes people, commit suicide. Stress's music, along with the Hungarian poet Laszlo Havior, breakup-inspired lyrics allegedly caused the suicides of at least 100 people. This is why the song Gloomy Sunday is synonymous with the phrase Hungarian suicide song. Rarely do you ever hear about songs that were banned because they were cursed, but in this case, Gloomy Sunday is one of those cases. While a few songs and as well movies are said to be cursed, the urban legend regarding the song of Gloomy Sunday is not like any other. Considered one of the few killer songs, the Gloomy Sunday song curse has an interesting and mysterious background. Following the months after the song's release, there were 18 confirmed suicides that attributed relating to the song in Hungary. While there is no explicit documentation tying all the suicides to the song, there are some chilling anecdotes. In 1936, an article in Time described several references to the deaths relating to the Gloomy Sunday. One man mentioned was a Hungarian shoemaker, Joseph Keller, who killed himself and left a suicide note with to the lyrics Gloomy Sunday. A group of people drowned themselves in the Danube River and were said to be holding sheet music to the song Gloomy Sunday. And even to the end, unfortunately, the song's composer, Stress, also was a victim of the same. And it was rumored that the song was actually written about a woman who took her own life as well. The song has a very deep, scary feel to it, and I'm only going to touch on this even briefer, but the song was initially actually written about the horrors of the concentration camps and the way these people had to live their lives day to day back then. But it triggered some sort of emotion in all of these people. And maybe it's the fact that the song was written about just this pure, horrible emotion that these folks had to go through, that maybe it triggered more people's emotions down the line. But it's very fascinating that so many people, in such a short amount of time, had the same sort of effect about the song over and over again. And remember, folks, if you need the help, my advice is to take it, and if you need to reach out, we're happy to listen to you. Even Count Panic and I are here for you.
Of course.
And if you are feeling of a certain mindset, my advice, please don't go listen to the song. I don't want that. I don't need that for you guys. So just be careful when you go about listening to the song. But I did want to share this as a weird case of some sort of music play that does, that did cause these things. And does it fall into the cursed world? Perhaps, but I just, that's a real depressing kind of note to that, and I'm curious to hear what Panic's take is on that.
No, for sure, and again, yes, Bobby, you're correct on that, but eerie, kind of bone-chilling in a way, Bob, and this is stuff, of course, that now I get too deep into, but
yeah, of course.
Yeah, as well, just terrifying all around, and I believe there's more stories like that, too. I could have sworn I heard something along the lines of that as well, as maybe it's a reoccurring thing in past years, too. So
it's possible.
Sad stuff, Bob.
But folks, remember that we do care and we do love every single one of you guys. So just wanted to point that out as we talked about that little story there.
There you go.
You guys do matter. Everybody's mental health does matter. So just remember that we care about you. This next one's a little bit on an up and up note.
That's what we need, Bob.
Yes,
we need an upper here.
Still kind of a curse song. So apparently there's a curse for people that write that have a certain profession in composing. We do have a phone call, so we'll take that before I move on. And folks, just know that I appreciate the chimes.
You know who it is, right?
Who do we have?
Jack.
Jack, you're on the air.
Hey guys.
Hey, what's going on, Jack?
Not much. I wanted to comment on the Robert Johnson story.
Yeah.
Hey, you said, Bob, you said that it's one of, like, one of your favorite stories. It's actually one of my favorite stories, too, to be honest.
Really?
I don't know. Yeah, I'm not sure why. Like, I mean, I do like the blues a lot. Maybe that's part of it. I just like that, you know, that folk magic kind of feel to the Robert Johnson legend. I just think it's very entertaining. It's very American, and I want to bring up the idea of the crossroads.
Sure.
And that comes from what's called conjure, and different from voodoo and hoodoo, just basically from where it originates. So real quick, just very briefly, the difference between voodoo and hoodoo is that voodoo is more of a religion, whereas hoodoo is a practice.
Yes.
So like voodoo is like the mindset, right? And hoodoo is like the craft behind it, right? So, and the difference between hoodoo and conjure is not much. It's actually very, very similar. Just they come from different parts of southern United States. Conjure comes from the Appalachian area, and they talk a lot about, you know, crossroads there, and, you know, burying mojo bags and crossroads to, you know, for spells to work and stuff. So yeah, that's where the crossroads idea comes from. And I just, you know, it's just, you know, we usually, when we think of like magic and like people that use magic, we usually think of like, you know, people like druids and ancient Egyptians and stuff. But we forget that, you know, America has its own magic, its own folk magic, and it was, you know, conjure and hoodoo. And I did speak to a worker at it's called the Occult Bookstore. It's in Chicago.
Oh, I've been there a few times.
Yeah. There's this guy there. He's very, very knowledgeable. And him and I, this was just actually a couple months ago. Him and I had this long discussion on conjure, because I bought a book on there about it recently. And he said that, you know, one of the main differences also is that, you know, hoodoo and voodoo originate with the slaves, whereas
yes,
conjure did not originate with the slaves. It originated with white settlers that were living in rural areas. So
mm-hmm.
I just wanted to bring that up.
Oh, absolutely. And then there's the world of the Voodoo as well, which is another step to that.
It goes deep.
It does. And the concept of where the people whose deity choices in their world, why they look a lot like saints that the Catholics have, is because that's what they knew.
Yeah,
so,
the Orishas, yeah.
Yep,
yeah,
the Orisha. Yep. Now, see, Jack, this is why I like you, because you're very knowledgeable in a lot of things. You are I was going to say a Swiss Army knife, but I guess that doesn't work here, does it? Well, you are. But I wanted a pun there. I was going to say like a Jack something, but I guess I lost
a Jack of all trades.
That's what I was thinking of, and I totally got derailed.
You got it there,
you
Bob.
Are a
but
Jack of all trades. Thank you for that, Cal Panic.
I had to make sure you knew that.
Now, Jack, Jack, before I let you go here, have you ever heard the story of the curse of the Ninth Symphony?
No, I have not.
Well, stick around, because I'm about to share that with you guys as we're running up to the last two stories here in our evening.
I will keep listening.
Thank you so much, Jack. All right. Now, did you know, Count Panic, that there
What's
was
that?
A nasty superstition amongst a certain profession known as composers between the 19th and 20th century? The idea is that a composer would die if they made and completed their Ninth Symphony.
Mm.
Referred to as the Curse of the Ninth, is a superstition developed during the late Romantic period, and some people believe that the composers were fated to die during or after writing their Ninth Symphony. By the way, I want to give a quick shout out to Maddie Shaw Roberts for this story from Classic FM. On the surface, the theory seems like it might have had some basis in fact. Beethoven, Schubert, Dvořák, and Vaughn Williams all died after completing their ninths. Anton Brocker died when his ninth was unfinished, and Mahler contracted pneumonia while writing his tenth. But like all good stories, this one just happened to be maybe a little debunked. Gustav Mahler, who wrote some of the most glorious symphonies of the late 19th and early 20th centuries, was one of the first composers to believe in a superstition surrounding the ninth symphonies. But Mahler was a little too obsessed with the idea. Seeing how fate struck down Beethoven and Brocker before him, he came up with a cunning plan to defeat the curse. After completing his eighth symphony, Mahler wrote a piece of music, Das Lied von der Erde. I actually kind of speak German, so that one actually came out pretty okay.
Not bad.
That was, in essence, a symphony, but guess what, Count Panic? He refused to call it a symphony.
Really?
He's like, you know what? This piece of music, it's not a symphony, so guess what? Fate can't come kill me
now. Okay, all right. Loophole.
Yes. He finished the ninth symphony and went to work on his tenth, but then contracted pneumonia while writing it and died in 1911, age 51, apparently proving the superstition correct. There are others, though. Arnold Schoenberg, whose music was heavily influenced by Mahler, described the curse of the ninth in an essay on the composer. He who wants to go beyond it must pass away. It seems as something might be imparted to us in the tenth, which we ought not to yet to know, for which we are not ready. Those who have written a ninth stood too close to the hereafter. There's a few issues with the theory. Because of the time of he was writing, not only the victims of the curse that Mahler had also been aware of were Beethoven and Bruckner. He would have known about Schubert's nine symphonies because of what is now called his ninth symphony, symphony number nine, the Great, was known as the seventh in Mahler's time. Plus, Dvorak's ninth, New World Symphony, wasn't even considered a ninth in Mahler's time. It was published as a symphony number 5, before four extra symphonies were appeared to come up after Dvorak's death, and Sofar, who is often included in the curse list, wrote and completed his tenth symphony, but withdrew it. So there have been composers over time, even though this Mahler, who was the big one who said that the curse of the ninth symphony was a thing, said that these other composers died all after they got to their ninth one. Apparently, there were uncompleted symphonies, but they did write them, and they came up after death. So nine wasn't the magic number, but in this case, at his time, when he thought it was, nine was it. And all these folks died before they can get the tenth one out, but apparently, even Beethoven actually wrote his tenth as well. So, curse of the nine no more? Maybe it was just one kind of fluke in the story. But if you're a composer, don't be writing over nine symphonies. But my question to that is, and I'm not, you have to forgive me, I'm not of the musical mindset, but if you're writing music as a band, you know, some bands have hundreds of songs.
Of course.
So what's the difference between a song and a symphony?
Uh-huh.
Like, and I'm not saying like a... You know, you by yourself with one guitar, because I'm assuming a symphony. I'm assuming, yes. By the way, folks, I apologize for any of your musical mindset people out there, especially the ones that work in the world of that. And I hope that you correct me if I'm wrong, so I know. If there's is a symphony many instruments performing at the same time to convey one piece of music? Is that what a symphony is compared to a normal song, or what? I'm not exactly sure.
I don't know all my classical music from Bugs Bunny cartoons, Bob, so I wouldn't be the one to tell you about that. And I like the classical music, just sometimes I wish it would have a little more lyrics to them as well. But that's interesting you talk about that stuff, because you wonder if there's a curse at some point, because all that seems to be happening after you hit the 10th piece there.
The 10th piece? Don't write your 10th symphony.
So should you just stop at 8? Would that be the thing to do? Just stop. Retire.
Call it retire.
Yeah.
But you have that last one that calls to you.
Do you?
Yeah.
Do you really?
You panic's like, nah, you know what?
I'm satisfied with 8's a good number. Or 9. You could go to 9, right? Technically.
You can write your 9th.
Yeah, but you can't go to 10.
You can't go to 10.
Yeah, stop at 9 then.
But some died during their ninth.
Well, then stop at eight.
Stop your counts. Like, you know what? I don't care.
Just make
if
one.
If this song is in my head and it's driving me mad, I'm not doing it. I'm not going to die today.
No, for sure. Well, again, proved wrong by a couple folks out there. That's good to see. But, again, I would stop. Definitely stop at seven. To be safe, stop at seven.
Safe bet.
But who? I can't even write one. Who am I kidding? So, I guess I'm safe.
You guess you're safe.
Yeah. You know, there's no modern day classical music. There should be more of that stuff.
That's not true.
Like,
I'm sure.
Things are going down in history.
I'm sure people are still writing orchestra pieces, and there's, you know, film scores and stuff that are, you know, big pieces. People like Hans Zimmer that did, you know, and I know you like the movies, the Dark Knight trilogy.
Yes, yeah.
I would consider that like a piece of, you know, orchestra brilliance.
Yes.
Or John Williams with his film scores, you know, E.T. and Jaws.
But there's no like hip new recording artist out there right now as far as check out this new classical track.
I don't know, man. Back when I was a young film student in college, I used to listen to, you know, I used to be like, oh, did you hear that, you know, that John Williams Jaws theme?
But an up and coming artist just making a record these days of classical music. You need some more of that, I think.
You're really going to be the only one that gets this, but Neil, wherever you are, we need you.
Oh, yes. We could be a guest next week.
If you could find Neil to come on
this
show.
He's still over there.
Is he still teaching?
I saw him. He's zooming in to my office meeting one time.
Neil Nemeth, if you are listening to the show, just know I appreciate you and I miss you, and I'm not joking.
He's eating imported pasta right now, probably.
I'm not joking. Neil was one of the greatest professors I've ever had.
Yeah,
no, that man was brilliant.
Knock the guy?
No.
No.
All right, so we talked a little bit about Robert Johnson and the blues. We talked a little bit about the unfortunate happenings that a one piece of song caused so much sadness. And we talked about the Ninth Symphony being cursed. Mm-hmm. There is one more modern-ish song that I wanted to talk about.
What you got, Bob?
Maybe you've heard it, Count, when you go out to your local karaoke bar, because it happens to be one of the most banned songs of all time, and that is Frank Sinatra's My Way.
My Way.
You know?
It's a classic song.
It's a classic song, but it's one of the most banned songs on karaoke
lists. Really? Why is that?
I've heard it from people that have run karaoke events before that people just butcher it really, really bad.
Isn't that all karaoke songs?
But in one case, in one place in the Philippines,
My
Way was the lead to some mysterious deaths. This is where the Bob After Dark kind of dives into that true crime territory.
All right. And we're sure we're talking about Frank Sinatra, not the Limp Bizkit, My Way.
No.
Okay, Frank Sinatra.
This is called the My Way Killings, and the My Way Killings is a social phenomenon in the Philippines, referring to a number of fatal disputes which aroused during the singing of the song My Way, popularized by Frank Sinatra, in karaoke bars. A New York Times article estimated the number of the killings to be about six up to 2010. Between 2002 and 2012, numerous people were killed for singing the song. Explanations for these incidents differ from song being simply frequently sung among the nation's karaoke bars where violence is common or to be perceived as aggressive lyrics to the song. The karaoke singing is widespread pastime in the Philippines, including among the poor were earning about $2 a day in 2007 and could purchase time on a videoke machine for about 5 pesos or 10 cents in U.S. currency. The Filipinos who could afford to do so often got private rooms at these karaoke bars. Since January 16th, 1998, about a half dozen incidences occurred in the connection with the strenuous complaints over the singing of the song My Way, promoting Filipino newspapers to name the phenomena the My Way Killings. Mm. Attention to these killings peaked on May 29th, 2007, when a 29-year-old karaoke singer was shot to death by a security guard in a bar in Sambueta, Riazal. The guard had complained that the young man's rendition of My Way was so off-key, but the man refused to stop singing, promoting the guard to pull out a .38 caliber pistol and shoot the man dead. Some Filipinos, even those who love the song, will not sing it in public in order to avoid trouble or superstitious fear. As of 2007, the song has been reportedly taken off most of the playlist karaoke bars and machines in Puerto Rico after complaints about an auto-tune rendition of the song started up, you know, bar fights and various other riots that happened. As a reference to the phenomenon, Japanese rock band Kishidan released an up-tempo rock cover of My Way as their 10-year anniversary of the single, with a promotional music video featured the lead singer being shot multiple times while singing the song. And the lead singer is shot once more in the back while walking away after the song concluded, collapsing in a heap on the stairs. A shortened version was used as a commercial. This song is banned a lot of places all over worldwide, but it's not one of the only songs that have caused death. In 2007, a karaoke singer in Seattle, Washington, was attacked by a woman who wanted him to stop singing Coldplay's Yellow. In 2008, a man was arrested in Thailand for shooting 8 people to death, including his brother-in-law, in a dispute stemming from several karaoke offerings, including a repeated renditions of John Denver, Take Me Home, Country Roads. In 2008, a man in a Malaysia coffee shop hogged the karaoke microphone so long that he was stabbed to death by other patrons. In 2012, a fight over a microphone broke out at a Chinese karaoke bar, with a man killing 2 others with a meat cleaver. And in 2013, an American was stabbed to death for refusing to stop singing in a karaoke bar in Thailand. But nothing more frequent than the concept of My Way being sung either so badly or off-key that it's driving people to kill other people. Yeah. What's your take on that?
Bob, karaoke is already a dangerous game, but this story just adds a different twist to it. You know what? These are all based in facts, I feel like. These are true stories here. And I guess it's one of those songs that may kind of drive you on the edge. Again, a Frank Sinatra classic. But you're right, maybe it's time to retire from these karaoke bars because, as we can see here, just does no good. Now, any word about Toto's Africa? Because that's my go-to karaoke song.
You know, I've been in bars where I've heard the Toto Rain song being sung. I've never seen someone get shot.
All right, good, because that's my go-to. So as long as that's okay.
Would you like to know mine?
What is yours?
Kiss from a Rose.
Seal. Yes.
Batman Forever.
Should we cue it up a little bit?
No, that would be copyright infringement.
The karaoke version.
We're good. No copyright strikes today on Bob After Dark.
Oh, Bob, that's terrifying.
Kiss from a Rose, My Heart Will Go On, and I Touch Myself by the DeVilles.
Good one as well.
Yeah. That's my other big karaoke one. You can catch me at your...
Stay tuned for Bob After Dark karaoke night coming.
My karaoke days are long behind me.
Nobody retires from karaoke.
Oh, listen, you want to know real quick, and then we'll call it here shortly. Best karaoke singer I've ever been around?
What?
Bob Anderson Sr., one of the finest, and I'm not joking with
you.
Really? Get him up there and do some Eric Clapton Wonderful Tonight. Knocks it out of the park.
To find a bar that does that.
I'd get him to get some karaoke when the world goes back to normal.
Stan Stefanski and Big Frank's, man, get some karaoke at Big Frank's Sausage.
Absolutely.
Fantastic, Bob.
Yeah. Now, Count Panic, any final words for the audience this evening?
Great
children
time,
of the
as
night?
Always, children of the night. Appreciate hanging with you here on Bob After Dark. Be careful going out to karaoke, and don't make any deals with the devil.
Absolutely. Folks, thank you so much for watching and listening to another episode of Bob After Dark. On behalf of me and Count Panic, again, folks, I just want to say your mental health is very important to us, and we hope that you guys get the help if you need. To my mom and dad, I just want to wish you sweet dreams. And to Tiff, no matter where you are in the world, I just want to wish you the sweetest dreams of them all. Good night, everybody. And remember, the 2 most important rules of Bob After Dark are, not all who wander are lost, and as above, so below. Until next time.
Memoriam Development.